Welcome to Canandaigua 1310 WOKR. This is Three Men and a Microphone, where we are first at local news. And first up to bat, we'd like to introduce one of my co-hosts, Mike Yarger from Facebook 2020 Canandaigua, and my other co-host, Miss Tina Bloom.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And we have two special guests today. We're going to talk to Jason Miniman from Northeast Archery Academy, and we're going to talk to Judy Smith and Carl Nagler from Sonnenberg Gardens for the Haunted Garden Stroll, plus all the local news, and we'll be right back after this message. The Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York, your one-stop shop for all your family's Halloween needs. But can you get an outfit out of the costume Nazi? I don't think so. The Spirit said, you gotta give him a good reason. What could you be from an Army-Navy store? Drill instructor, ranger, marine commando, special ops operator, pilot, zombie, Amelia Earhart, bandito, the other guy, border guard, get it, tanker, Jill Valentine, Resident Evil, sailor, flight suit, prisoner, Leatherface, Top Gun, Goose and Maverick, dead goose, yeah, I said that, post-apocalyptic family, Big Boss, Metal Gear, Dictator, we have the cigars for it. Gaier, Street Fighter, Iron Mike's, MX.com, The Military Exchange Talk Show on YouTube. See our Halloween video at The Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Welcome back to Canandaigua 1310, Three Men and a Microphone, and
a lady.
I think we finally got it. That's the way to do it. Sonnenberg Gardens and Mansion State Historic Park. And this is Haunted Garden Stroll with Judy Smith and Carl Nagler. And Judy, if you could tell us a little bit about your organization and what you guys do there for our community.
Okay, I will. Sonnenberg is a state park, a state historic park, and the state helps us with some of the big things like tearing down the veranda and redoing all of that. But when it comes to the day-to-day daily operations, Sonnenberg itself has to come up with the money for the payroll, the insurance, all the maintenance. And it's a very expensive place with a 40-room mansion and a 50-acre area with 9 gardens and conservatories and all kinds of outbuildings. So we're always trying to find money somewhere. So we do a lot of fundraisers. So this is the 5th year that we've done this. It's a one-night deal. It's Sunday, October 29th from 6 to 8:30, and it's family-friendly. We try to keep the price down. It's $7 a person. Children 5 and under are free. So it's a pretty reasonable night. I don't think you can go to the movies for that anymore. And we have about 50 characters. It's a stroll, so people park in the main lot and then stroll through. And Carl, when he talks, he can tell you about all the goings-on. But it's a great fundraiser. There will be refreshments in the carriage house, and people don't touch you. People don't chase you. It's we don't have chainsaws, things like that. So, you know, it's spooky, it's scary, but I don't think kids will have nightmares from it. It's kind of a fun night. So
is
we're hoping everybody
event?
Can come. It's outdoors. It's about 3/4 of a mile walk, and you can take your time. We group people into groups of 8 or 10 and send them off and, you know, try to keep them separated a little bit so there's a measure of surprise in there so they're not all in one big line and see what's happening ahead of time. But it's a good night.
Anything happening in the mansion? I'm sorry, Tim.
For the first time, we are letting people into the mansion. They're coming in the handicap area where they'll be greeted with a butler. And the story goes that there's a General Winslow that's a true story. He and his wife were visiting Mrs. Thompson, and he died there. And so the story goes that General Winslow had died 2 weeks before, and his ghost won't leave, and that strange things are happening. Like, I think there's an elk that makes noise, and it's only his head hanging on the wall. And Mrs. Thompson will be there, a couple of maids, a butler, different things happening. They won't go through the whole mansion. They'll come in the handicap into the billiard room. They'll go through the great hall where they'll see different things and exit through the vestibule where there's a staircase and an elevator where things might be happening, and then back outside.
I was just going to say, you're having this Halloween event on the 29th, but there are stories that there's true hauntings or spiritual activity at Sonnenberg.
There
so I think
are.
That's kind of a nice tie-in.
I believe there are. I was in there alone one night, and lights kept going off and on, and I was terrified. And there's a lot of stories.
I've heard a lot of stories.
But they're friendly. They've been there for years, and no one, you know, they're just there. It's a good place. I love Sonnenberg. I grew up a block from there. I snuck in all the time as a kid.
Didn't we all? You did too, right?
And got kicked out by the VA guards. And I said, now I finally figured out I volunteer. I can get in and I don't get kicked out anymore. I love it and I want to keep it going. So we have to keep doing these fundraisers.
Judy, how long have you been involved with Sonnenberg as a volunteer?
As a volunteer, probably, 20 years.
That's incredible.
Yeah, because I was in when they had the old ones. I was a ghost. I was a witch. I've been all kinds of things over there. I've been a housekeeper. I've been on the board. I've been in charge of the events committee. I started 5 of the events myself. So I just was awarded the Mary Clark Thompson Award last week.
Congratulations.
So, on
thank
that.
You.
Judy, do you have a witch's war cry?
Yes, I do, my little pretty.
That's pretty good. Oh, my gosh.
That was good. You made me jump.
I'm terrified. No, and we were talking about it a little bit off the air, Judy, but I remember going as a teenager to some of these haunted walks that they had at Sonnenberg, and then it seems like they went away for a number of years, and then now they've kind of slowly made their way back, which I think is great. So was there a period of time where there wasn't funding, or you just didn't have volunteer staff, or what happened there?
I think it was a different leadership, you know, and it got kind of out of hand. It went on for, sometimes almost a month for like 4 weekends, and you had to keep finding so many people to work. And so the only way you could find a lot was to find a lot of teenagers, and teenagers are hard to supervise. And, you know, and then different other places started having haunted things, you know, so it just stopped.
Yeah.
For quite a while, but now we've started a lot of different things. We have a 5K run, and, you know, we do the home tour, and we have teas, mother's teas, and things like that.
Mysteries in the mansion.
Yeah, mystery mansion, mansion mysteries. So we're always looking for different ways to make money.
So going back to Halloween.
We're not going to give you any more clues as to what the haunted walk's about this year. I'm sorry. She gave way too much. I don't like that. I don't like giving up all our secrets.
So who are we talking to right now, Tim? This is...
Carl Negley.
Carl Negley, yep.
Hi, everyone.
And Carl,
yes?
I mean, we're just going to say this. The military exchange has helped in a costume.
That's right. Leave it alone. Don't go any farther with
it. That doesn't rock your boots... I don't know what will.
You got it.
It's one of my favorite things.
That was a great thing. I came in the other day. I asked Tim, said, Tim, I've got to have a costume for a character. And before I even finished my sentence, he knew exactly what I wanted. And, this is going to be a good one.
You're being incredibly vague, Carl.
I have to be. I have to be. It wouldn't be a haunted stroll if I wasn't.
All right, I guess I'll be there. I'm going to have to figure out what that is. All right.
You'll know.
There'll be no question.
It's my favorite thing to help people costume.
Right.
I've already had a couple Toy Story, all green soldiers come in.
Yeah, yeah.
One guy's going to be Captain America. It's fun that they come into the store
and they find so many costumes here. I mean, I'm looking around the store right now, and in my professional business, I'm a landscape designer. And my brain is constantly spinning with ideas. And I am just looking around on how many things you can be as a costume from this store. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely amazing what you have here. So I'm excited.
You can find in here. Yeah. We also do professional theatrical costumes. We've done Boston to 50 outfits. We do New York City. We do commercials. I know we're in parts of movies. Some movies I'm not happy about that I wouldn't have loaned them costumes. I found out later, but whatever. You didn't, you know.
Right.
They get you, but it's a fun part of the business.
Right. It's really cool here.
Yeah, I hope you guys have a great time.
I think we will. I think you know. Every year I've been a part of it. Just in the recent 5 years, I'm a transplant from Fairport, so. But when Judy came down the street, we live on the same street, and she saw what I do for Halloween, She goes, you got to help me out. I go, I'm like, all right, I can do that.
Oh, you're that guy.
I'm that guy.
Oh,
arr, I be the captain on the Washington Street. Arr. You know me as the pirate.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Do you have a home display?
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah.
Are you that guy that like, spreads
that guy
out the whole yard?
Yeah, but I'm not that guy with the big, you know, air-blown, goofy Halloween stuff. I'm the authentic, historic, the coffin, the... You know, all those things with the scary lights, and it's what Halloween to me is about.
So you're not the Clark Griswold of Halloween.
No. No, I want to scare the living you-know-what out of you, if I can.
So you must
but
be...
give you candy, too.
Oh,
but...
well, of course. I think you have to be pretty creative, as it is, in your profession, right?
Gotta
as a landscape designer,
you've
so that probably
be on the
translates
top, yeah.
into what you're doing at Sonnenberg at your own home,
right,
which is
exactly.
super cool.
And that's kind of why I came here, because these were, you know, some of the ideas in my brain. When every year we'll take a couple hours and go over some ideas as to how the stroll is gonna, you know, go through the gardens, because every year it's different. And Judy and myself and Mary, oh, love you, Mary, thank you. She's Mary Woodward is another character that has just unbelievable ideas mm-hmm. and. Well, she's part of this. I'm not telling you who she is. You'll never recognize her, I'll tell you that. But she's fantastic. And every year we try to change it up, you know. And this year is totally different from any other year. A little similarities, you know, in different scenes and stuff. But I do remember last year. Last year was fantastic. If any of you have been on the walk, I was actually the head caretaker of the gardens, and hello, do you remember this voice? And I was telling everybody to you know, be careful going into the Italian garden, because my gardeners were out there weeding, and if you make any sudden movements, they might consider you a weed.
Uh-oh.
And pull you.
Oh,
and they're all zombies, and it's dark. And there's mist and all that. And once you got around one turn, they all popped out. Mm-hmm. And I have never seen some people just, like, shriek. And and it was really nice. You know, they were real friendly with the kids. If they saw kids coming,
sure,
they weren't going to
sure.
do that. But it's good.
I love it. Now, is there a lot of community involvement with this? So
yes.
Have you gotten a lot of volunteers? I know, Judy, you referred to teenagers at one point. Do you get kids from the school that volunteer? You said refreshments are, you know, local restaurants or Wegmans, are they participating in terms of things like that?
Sonnenberg has a group called Friends, and they're the ones that do the refreshments. And it's mostly homemade cookies, whoopie pies, cider, things like that. And most of the we only have a couple of kids this year, and they're teenagers, and most of them are with parents. But it's mostly adults. I believe we have about 50 people.
That's really
so,
nice.
And they all do their own costumes. We don't spend any money on this. You know, this is total profit.
Great.
Yeah.
I love that we have something Halloween in Canandaigua again.
Yes,
that's,
right.
That's super.
So,
that's cool.
Just to recap, this is Sonnenberg Haunted Garden Stroll, October 29th from 6 p.m. to 8:30. You would get in through the main gate, which
right.
I'm told
right.
is off Charlotte Street.
At the end of Howell Street.
You go in that way, and then you go to the big parking lot. They group you up, and you go off on your stroll.
And you're allowed to charge, which that brings some people in, and you don't have to have cash. You can use a charge card.
You can use a credit card, really?
Yes. Right.
I wouldn't have thought of that.
We started
that
last year.
Fantastic.
Perfect. No, I'm looking forward to it. I'll be there for sure. Thank you, guys.
Thank you
very
guys
much
for the time.
Thank you. Enjoyed.
Another tactical and practical moment has been brought to you by Iron Mike's Military Exchange. Camouflage netting was designed to cover up military buildings, tents, tanks, and artillery. Ah, but back stateside, at home, in your backyard, it's the perfect shade for the family patio or deck, or a dog kennel. It's a great blind for hunting duck and deer and to cover up that boat or tree stand. Perfect for a backstage drop for your next theatrical performance or airsoft and paintball scenario games. Iron Mike's camouflage netting comes with or without reinforced net backing. 100% waterproof, rot and mold resistant. Quiet and rustle free, texture for a more natural look. UV and non non-toxic treated to prevent glare and shine. Reversible for different color options to best fit the environment. Pliable even in extreme temperatures. Comes in several sizes, 10x10, 10x20, 8x10, 8x20, and 4x10. And camouflage netting comes in many colors, woodland, desert, dead duck, snow, and many more. This tactical to practical moment was brought to you by Iron Mike's Military Exchange, located in Canandaigua.
Check them out online at ironmikes.co.
America will survive.
Welcome back to Canandaigua 1310. Three men and a microphone and
a lady.
Oh, look, that's great. So we're going to talk to Jason Minimum from Northeast Archery Academy. And he's going to tell us a little bit about his organization, what they do, and guess what? What a surprise for us to support them. They work with veterans.
Morning.
Morning, sir. Tell us a little bit about Northeast Archery Academy.
Yep. So Northeast Archery Academy is a 501c3 not-for-profit organization that was started to not only help bring veterans into the shooting sports programming, but also we do a ton of programming with youth. We do a number of education classes, coaching certifications, private lessons, group instruction, pretty much everything that has to do with archery.
Now, you have an amazingly huge facility.
Yep.
It's awesome.
It's getting there, slowly but surely, yeah. So it's located over in Farmington, New York, and it was something we came across out of need to provide a facility for education classes, coaching classes, classroom space, and different things like that.
And you work with vets?
We do, yep. Being a veteran myself, it was something that I got involved in after I got out of the service, reconnected back with the outdoors. I had a group of military friends that brought me into competitive target shooting, and it kind of took off from there. So I went as a competitive shooter, and then I got involved in working with a number of different veteran programs. And through our program, we've started doing some of that programming internally ourselves. So we do, it's more of a social program to get everybody together, kind of the folks that miss the brotherhood a little bit. We have some special nights that we do competitive shooting with everybody. And then we have, out of that, we have some folks that continue on and do some of our travel team programs. And they travel the country with the rest of our competitive shooting teams.
Jason, how long have you been shooting, and how long has your organization been in existence?
Yep, so the Northeast Archery Academy itself was established in 2015. I've been shooting competitively for about 12 years now, and now most of my time is spent coaching and mentoring and working with youth and working with veterans. A lot of connections with Canandaigua VA, Batavia. We do a lot of stuff, PTSD, bringing the family dynamic back together. And one of the nice things with shooting sports is it gives an opportunity for the family to, and the support system to be able to work with the veterans as well. So we bring them in, we do an individual program with them, and then once we get them a little bit more independent, then we start bringing in spouse, children, and things like that, and kind of turn it into a whole family activity.
Awesome. So are the majority of your participants, do they have a background in shooting or archery, or are they novices, or would you say it's 50-50?
It's about 50-50.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a pretty good split. We do a lot of work with outreach to grow the sport as a whole, so there's a lot of new introduction that we do, but a good portion of the individuals that we work with do have some background. Most of them come from the hunting background, or they've shot archery through hunting. And then as we provide competitive opportunities to them, that just enhances what they continue.
That's tremendous.
Yep.
And now you said you have a youth program. What age do they start at?
Yeah, so we've got a couple different youth programs. We do our own internal program. We have a Junior Olympic Development Program. We have a program called S3DA, which is the Scholastic 3D Archery in the Schools program. I'm actually the state coordinator for New York State for that program. So I oversee the implementation of those programs throughout clubs and schools for the entire state of New York. We've got a couple local school districts. We've got Victor School District has an archery team. We've got about 30 kids on that team. Dansville has a shooting team. They're actually growing significantly in numbers. We just went down and did a coaching certification with them because they've got about 100 students that they're looking to bring in.
Fantastic.
Yeah, amazing
that is
program.
Great.
But the programs go anywhere from, we usually start them 6 or 7 years old all the way up through. And then, so we use our development programs, our JOAD and our S3DA program to enhance development with the kids. And then after that, we have a pipeline up to our national program. So we actually have a gold, silver, and bronze competitive team that travels nationally. We've got about 10 or 12 kids on that team, and the kids that are on our gold team are all ranked in the top 10 nationally.
Wow, yep. Fantastic.
Yep, we've got a 14-year-old girl who comes to us. She's down in Vestal, New York, and this year she has podiumed at two of the national championships, and at the state championship she actually set a national record.
So does she come from Vestal up here for her training? And like
yeah,
that?
She does. We've been very fortunate to have a lot of really good coaching experience, myself and then our head development coach, Gary Neal. He's actually one of the top three compound coaches in the country, and he comes from Watkins Glen, New York. He was actually just recognized last month as the 2017 USA Archery Development Coach of the Year, and that's an award that's recognized by the U.S. Olympic Committee.
Wow, is that not great? Who knew that we had this in our community, right?
Not at all. Additionally, I love to see that this young girl from Vestal is doing so well. You know, anytime a young woman can exceed and succeed in a sport that traditionally might be seen as being male-dominated or something that boys do,
right. You
go, girl. I think that's incredible. Good for her.
We actually, women actually represent the largest growth segment in shooting sports as a whole. So we have, believe it or not, on our youth teams, we're probably a 60-40 split with females as the majority. In our team programs.
Now, so. Jason, is there a technical advantage to being a female, being that we're smaller? Is our, you know, do we have a better aim or better control over the equipment?
It's,
or?
It's lack of ego.
All right, I like it. We'll go with that.
Yeah, super, you know, women, we do a lot of instruction with women, and very, very coachable. They listen. They respond much better than the male counterparts.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
So, but there's also a flip side to that.
Oh,
so.
Boy. All right, we're going to cut for a commercial.
Once they get that competitive fire brewing, then it becomes a very, very competitive environment for the women archers, and they're pretty relentless.
That's a good thing.
Yep, and we also do in addition to archery, we're trying to round out our shooting sports portfolio as a whole. So we have a great relationship with Crossman Arms. We're doing some work on a competitive air rifle programming and some different things like that. So.
That's cool.
That is great.
So when I was a kid. We actually had a program through our parks department where they taught us archery. Matter of fact, Boone Baker was the guy who headed up the programs in Canandaigua at the time. Baker Park was named after him.
Okay.
Do you guys do anything with the rec departments in the area?
We do. So USA Archery, there's a big outreach from USA Archery, and there's a program called Explore Archery. And what it is it's curriculum that USA Archery put together that's designed to entice our youth through parks and rec-based programs to get them involved in archery. And it's really built around teaching the kids archery, but the curriculum is coupled around a lot of fun activities and fun games, and they've really built that. And then in addition to that, there's a program called Explore Bow Hunting. So in addition to the Explore Archery, the kids that want to get involved in the outdoors and get involved in the hunting community, there's the same type of program, but it's built around the hunting side of it. So we take kids out, we teach them how to build ground blinds, we teach them tracking, we teach them camouflage and some different things like that, woodsmanship.
That's really neat.
Yeah. So if somebody were interested in, you know, participating in an archery program or something like that, how would they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so we've got our website is www.thearcheryacademy.org. And again, it's a 501c3. We also have a Facebook page that's available out there.
Is equipment available, Jason, if people want to go out and try it out, or do they bring their own?
It is. Most individuals that come through the programs, they have their own equipment, but we do have equipment that we use for training programs and kind of getting people started to determine whether or not they like it. And, you know, most people, it's a pretty quick turnaround by the time they start with using some borrowed equipment from us, and then they're going out to the community and they're patroning the local area bow shops and purchasing their own equipment. So
great.
It's great, great economic impact for the community as well. So.
Real quick, Jason, hunting this year, is crossbow allowed?
It is there. So it's been allowed the last couple of years. They ran a pilot program for that. They've incorporated their own season at the end of bow season. So it's the last week or so of bow season. I think it runs November 4th to November 17th. So you can use crossbow during that later part of the archery season, right before the firearm season. Then you can also use it in the regular firearm season as well.
That's great. Well, thanks very much for coming on. Your excellent interview. Very well-versed. I loved hearing you talk. Can you tell me how people can get a hold of you and your website or Facebook page?
Yep, absolutely. So best way is most of our information is put on our contact information is put on our website, which is www.thearcheryacademy.org. And then our Facebook page, if you search us on our Facebook page, we put all – constant up-to-date information on our Facebook page, pictures of the kids shooting and activities and our veterans and things like that. So that's a really great program. Again, I know with this being a military centric show, that's a really important piece to me. It's a personal activity of mine, and we really are trying to create a lot of outreach and give not only the social aspect, but then include folks such as yourselves to provide outreach for other services that they may need throughout the community.
That's great. That's a great thing that you're doing down there.
I appreciate it.
And thanks for your service, Jason.
Oh, thank you.
All right. And thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I got my hot sauce and this old frying pan.
Welcome back to Canandaigua 1310. Three men and a microphone and
a lady.
Oh, now you're tired of it already.
I have to change this up.
I can do it. Next time you say three men and I'll say a lady.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. All right. Canandaigua 1310. Welcome back to three men, a mic, and
a lady.
I think it's better that way.
So, Mike, what do you got for us today?
Okay. So, we have a couple programs coming up dealing with the substance abuse problem. The Substance Abuse Prevention Coalition, which is the SAPC, on October 17th from 2 to 4 in the afternoon, is holding a program at FLCC, room 2775. And they're doing this with the FLCC Chemical Dependency Department. This is being put on by Petra Ray, who's the coalition coordinator. And remember that name, because I'm hearing this name all over the community. Apparently, if you have concerns about the opioid addiction problems, heroin, Suboxone, whatever it is, and you have questions about that, it seems like the person who is most on top of that is this Petra Ray in our community.
Hmm. She's been on our show twice.
Great.
We could have her back if you want.
I think that'd be great.
Yep.
They also have Dr. Stan Rodick from FLACRA, Finger Lakes Area
Recovery Addiction.
Addiction Recovery Association or whatever.
Yep, you
something
got
like
it.
That. You need a shorter name, FLACRA.
It's an acronym to begin with.
Right. And there's the Community Support Center and Trillium Health are putting on this program. And basically what they're trying to do is educate the community about the opioid addiction problem. And they will have a lot of statistics. They will talk about ways to deal with that in communities. So they're inviting the public to attend this. As I said, it's going to be on the FLCC campus. And if you're interested in going, you can contact Petra, which is P-E-T-R-E-A dot Rhea, R-E-A, at Gmail, or FLCC Professor Mary Murphy at mary.murphy@flcc.edu.
So this is for community awareness, Mike? I mean, this
right.
isn't for people in recovery. This is for people wanting to, assist.
To become educated about the program.
Okay.
Right. Right.
Great.
Then we've got on the 18th of October at the Wood Library, some of the same people are going to be talking about acupuncture and the opioid addiction, one alternative solution. And this kind of ties into medically assisted treatment, where people are saying, well, you need to be able to allow these drug addicts to be on some kind of drugs. And programs like AA are not supportive of that idea.
Well, how Suboxone clinics came into existence, right?
Right.
I mean, we're trying to replace one with another to and almost downgrade and downshift, but it doesn't always work that way.
Right, right. So here they're saying there's another alternative. We can use acupuncture to help treat. And I have no idea what the effectiveness of anything like that is as far as, treatment goes. But I'm glad that they're looking outside the box at some possible solutions.
I was just going to say, you don't tend to hear a lot about alternative treatments for, and I don't think we've tried that or attempted it, at least in our community, acupuncture. Have you guys ever tried acupuncture for anything? I've heard of it. I've never tried it. It's on my bucket list.
To be stabbed with needles.
Yeah.
I
right.
have a crazy bucket list. No, seriously, because, you know, massage therapy is huge. I hear acupuncture is supposed to be the same way, so hopefully it has some carryover benefit to folks who have addiction affliction.
You know what works?
What works?
Cold turkey, you're going to say.
No. A good little glass of scotch, 12 years or older, and a great cigar from Corporal Thornton's Cigar Shop.
Oh, boy.
Sit back on your deck, watch your dogs run back and forth, smoke your cigar, and guess what? You go back in the house, you sleep well.
Well, see, I think you hit on something, Tim. We all have coping mechanisms, or we all have ways that we unwind, and it's disappointing that some people are sick. They're ill with addiction, or, you know, they have some other issue where they can't find simple pleasures and things that, you know, folks like us might want to do after a long day of work or just to relax or unwind. Your mind is always on that next fix.
Right.
And that's sad. So hopefully something like these programs really work.
A fix is an escape. Sure. They want to escape, and that's a hard part of bringing them back down to reality. That I think is the hardest thing. Is they want to escape. They want to get out of what they are,
yeah,
or their situation. I don't know. You got to hit them with love, but you got to hit them with reality. And sometimes I hate to be the stickler, but you know, Otis the drunk dried out in the tank, you know, and then of course on the show he never got better. But sometimes 90 days incarceration gives you 90 days of drying out and being able to eventually come to a clear thought. And once you have that clear thought, and that's actually a key word, then you can go on.
Yeah.
It's hard. And there's other ways, of course, I'm sure. But I'm kind of a stickler for just, I usually say, you know, burn it all down. If it's all bad and it's all going wrong and you know it's spinning out, burn it all down and start over. Start fresh.
And do you feel like you have to change your environment? So if you are an alcoholic, yes, or you have a drug addiction, let's say you go somewhere to dry out and then you come back home, you're faced with the same situations, the same community as you used to be. We tend to go back to what's comfortable. I personally don't
absolutely
like change either. You know,
you definitely should change your friends, your environment.
Even where you live. I mean, I don't know that you could live in the same town. I mean, if your thing is to go home from work and then you go to the local watering hole, you know,
right,
and say that you're an alcoholic. I don't think that that's...
I didn't mean either one of them was
so not PC. No, I think you totally need to change everything, and that's got to be tough, and you need courage to do that. And to your point, Tim, I think you do need clarity of mind, and you can't do that while you're still being influenced by drugs or alcohol.
Right.
Right. Or your environment. You're right for,
yeah,
bringing that up.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So moving on, I just want to give a reminder that today, if you're listening to this program on Saturday, okay, today Ontario County is having their open house, and that runs from 10 o'clock in the morning. So as soon as this program's over, right, you're going to be running over here to Ontario County. All their facilities are going to be open, including the jail. And you'll have an opportunity to talk to the various people in, right,
hey,
you know.
Lock myself up.
Well, I'm just,
you know,
saying,
they can do the work themselves.
They could.
I'm not turning myself in. Come get me. I pay taxes. I'm going to regret saying that someday,
yes,
right?
Will.
Right, right. You'll have a visitor here shortly.
There.
We're being surrounded as we speak.
So that runs from 10 o'clock in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. They're going to have the court facilities open. You know, if you wanted to go up and visit the DA's office, which a lot of people have never had an opportunity to do,
yeah,
this would be a great opportunity to do that.
We talk about openness of government. You know, it is our tax
dollars, right,
paying for this. So
that's,
let's,
right,
take a look at the facilities in,
that's,
which,
right,
we help to.
But the
provide
facilities are open, or is there actually going to be people there for them to talk to?
Yeah, both.
So is it like an open door policy where you can show up, knock on the door, and say, hey,
yeah,
Mr.
I'm
Mr.
here for the open
Mr.
house.
Mr. Westbrook, I have a complaint.
Well,
I want you to,
okay,
hear me.
Okay, so this
is
Ontario,
is it that
County
kind of open?
This is Ontario County. We're not talking the town of Canandaigua now.
Although,
I think,
we should be. It is,
right,
kind of his
I think
that.
Greg will be in his
Saturday
office
morning.
On Saturday morning.
That's right.
But this is actually for Ontario County. But, yeah, you show up at one of the facilities, like the jail, mm-hmm, and you say, I'd like to do a tour of the jail at 10 o'clock in the morning, and they'll take you through.
I think I just stepped on a...
I was just saying, I have so many comments.
I'm so sorry I brought it up, because now people are going to go and go, hey, you know what? I'm glad you're open on Saturday. I got a problem. My neighbor, I had a guy once say this, his spotlight or his security light shines in my yard.
Oh, my goodness. Was this in,
wow,
the city of Canandaigua?
It was somewhere out this way because they came in the store to complain.
Oh, because we had a similar issue come up in city politics, and it was an interesting conversation that was taking place. And again, it was two neighbors squabbling over somebody's light flooding into the neighbor's
house. Then let me help you. You know what I suggested?
What's that?
Because I'm usually on whoever side comes in. You know, that's...
Of course.
Because I don't know the other guy.
Of course you are. Right.
I don't know them. So I suggested you get a great big mirror, aim it right back at them.
Uh-huh. Oh, my goodness.
I think it's hilarious.
So you take your window out, you put a mirror in where your window was, and the light just reflects back into the neighbor's yard.
I think that would work.
Or just get curtains.
Or that may work, too.
I like shining it right back at them, angling it a little bit, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
What else you got?
All right. So the Boy Scouts announced this week that they're going to start welcoming girls in. Okay. And I'm anxious to get Tina's input on this.
Yeah. So obviously I'm pro-woman, pro-female, but you have Boy Scouts. You also have Girl Scouts. So this isn't an organization where if girls... females want to be part of a similar organization, they can't, because we do. We already have that set up. We have that established. If Girl Scouts want to go into Boy Scouts because they maybe want to learn to, you know, make fires and set up tents, things that you might learn in Boy Scouts that they don't in Girl Scouts, let's bring that up with Girl Scout leadership and have them start adding elements of those things into Girl Scouts. But this is, I think we've just taken this way, way, way too far. I think it's ridiculous. I was talking to my brother-in-law yesterday, who is... a Cub Scout co-leader, den leader, or however you phrase it. And he was saying that it is now left up to the individual packs or dens or local groups whether or not they want to allow, you know, girls into the Boy Scouts. They can make their own kind of local ruling. What scares me about that is if you say no, I think we're just going to remain a boys-only organization. Do you look like you're being... I don't know, prejudiced, or you're being a bigot of sorts, going back to that bigotry and hatred agreement that they wanted everyone to sign on city council and in town. I mean, we're just going way too far in one direction or another. What's the purpose? What's the meaning behind allowing a girl into Boy Scouts? I see no reason. As a female myself, I see absolutely no reason a girl should have any need or want to join Boy Scouts, unless it's for specific events that they're holding. Then let's see if you can do that on the Girl Scout side. If you want to learn specific skills, bring that up to Girl Scout leadership. I don't think you need to be part of the Boy Scouts as a female to achieve that goal.
The way I heard it on the radio, the Girl Scouts didn't know this announcement was coming.
Correct.
They're not that thrilled about it. I was an assistant scoutmaster for about 4 years. And, you know, what I saw was we would do big events with the Canadians. And the Canadians... have a mixed scouting organization. Seemed to work okay for them. However, when mixed with our side, not so much. Just pure shock and awe at seeing a female running around the camp. And it was odd. I don't think the Americans dealt well with it. My other thought is, boys should be allowed to be boys and girls should be allowed to
exactly.
be girls for a lot longer before you force the mixture. Let them grow up and understand what they want. Should Girl Scouts get more into camping and outdoor activities? Because that's what the girls want. They want that out of the Boy Scouts because they do that. The Girl Scouts aren't quite known for that. So when we had, like, I was dating a woman who had a daughter, she wanted to do the stuff with the Boy Scouts because it was all outdoor stuff. And the Girl Scouts were kind of like at somebody's house. So you could see where the Girl Scouts need to be more like the Boy Scouts, but I really think let kids be kids at least up until, I would say, 17, 18, whatever. And let them grow up on their own. They don't. We always try to force this stuff.
Absolutely.
By the way, I've been involved in mixed boot camp training, or well, not boot camp, but basic training. It didn't work. It was a horrible experience. Sometimes you need to be, the sexes need to be separate.
And there are physiological differences. I mean, in terms of strength and stamina and abilities. I mean, it's human nature. And I think if we don't acknowledge that and we keep trying to push the issue, it's just going to result in disaster. Now, you referred to the military, Tim. Are women allowed in combat? Did they change that? Because at one time they weren't, right?
Well, we are now. We are now. Something I didn't tell you about myself.
Oh, boy.
But the military does have combat MOSs, and they've had them for quite a while, right up to the first Gulf War. And women have always been in combat. In one way or the other, it just the nature of combat is going to encroach on, you know, any division at any time.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you've got combat MOSs that are women are allowed in. The Marine Corps, I believe, just had its first female officer in charge of infantry, so she'll be leading troops into combat, and I'm okay with that. That part. I've gone from military police to infantry, so I've had female commanders, and I have no issue with that. I just got to say this. I really think Captain Clausen, Ima Clausen, is from this area, and she used to run us in Germany with curlers in her hair at 5 in the morning up the mountains of Germany, and she was just as fast and strong on the track as any one of the guys.
I love it.
I never had a problem with a female officer or a woman in charge. By the way, my mother's a very strong executive woman. So that's not the problem. But I just think at some point when you're first starting out in life and it's tent camping and all this other stuff, I'd rather still see it separate.
Okay.
But I'd like to see the Girl Scouts go more towards outdoor activities.
And I think that could be addressed within their own organization, right? They don't necessarily need to have these young girls joining Boy Scout troops. Start doing different things in Girl Scouts. Make it a more well-rounded organization.
There is one more political thing that I feel obligated to throw out there. One of the people on the conservative talk show guys on 1310 brought this up. You start mixing the kids, right, boys and girls at a young age, and then how do you address the issue of transgender? It's a great way to slip that in. You're a girl, but you identify with someone else, or a boy identify with someone else, so now you're allowed to go wherever you want. And they're going to have to deal with that if they mix the two together. And it's again, why?
Okay.
Why do we have to do that
so,
preteen?
Tim, won't they have to deal with that regardless?
I don't know.
I think you would anyways. I
think it still comes down to what the doctor says. You know, you can be sympathetic to a cause, but if the doctor says, I'm sorry, you're a boy, then you join the Boy Scouts. I'm sorry, you're not a boy, you join the Girl Scouts. It's still what the doctor says. It's not at this point, it's not a matter of what you identify with.
Okay. All right, I see where you're coming from. But let me point out a couple things, okay? One is we have an Eagle Scout program, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the Boy Scouts. Girl Scouts don't have this, okay? And it is something that's highly regarded. People who complete this Eagle Scout program, they're considered the creme de la creme of the scouting program.
You're right.
And they're always boys because the Girl Scouts don't have that. So the Girl Scouts, do they need to develop their own Eagle program? Or would it be better for the girls to have an opportunity to complete the Eagle program in the Boy Scouts?
No, and that's a great point, Mike, and I guess I didn't realize that. I wasn't part of Girl Scouts, so I
okay.
had no idea there was no equivalent. Absolutely, there needs to be a program like that, but why couldn't you take that same program and translate it into the Girl Scouts? I mean, have the exact same requirements, because it's based on projects, right, and volunteerism,
right.
And,
right.
and doing things in your community. Those are all things you don't have to be a male or female to do.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, just create a, you know, instead of calling it Eagle Scout, create another name on the Girl
well,
Scout
okay,
side.
Okay, so they have something else on the Girl Scout
okay.
side. It's called, like, the Gold Star or something like that.
All right.
But it doesn't have the same cachet that you have with the Eagle Scout program for the Boy Scouts, and that's part of the issue.
Well, sounds like it's been left behind into the old, you know, 1950s cliche where, you know, how good are you at domestics?
Sure.
You know, or even maybe even politics or something, you know, social services,
civil.
Well,
now you're going
civil,
down a rabbit hole we don't want to.
But I would, I mean, in my opinion, but I know that people aren't going to like this, but I would like to see more of a survival warrior spirit with the women. If being an Eagle Scout makes you the best guy to join a police department or pick you for a job in the military and things like that, or even in a corporate organization, right?
Right.
Then let's train our women that way, too.
Right.
And then when you say we want women in combat, and this is the correlation that nobody at home is really going to like, but you want to build a warrior, then start out young.
Right.
Right? Teach them how to shoot. Teach them how to do archery. Teach them how to do the things to survive, to all these things. And then when they do get to the military, right, and they want to go into a higher is probably not a better word, but a combat MOS, right, then they've already had those 4, 5, 6 years to get there instead of just, boom, I have to switch this and figure it out for myself.
And I don't know that we even necessarily need something that's just physical strength, although if you do want to be, if that's, you know, if you want to go into the military or the police force or something that requires a great deal of physical work, absolutely. But let's just talk about leadership skills and developing, you know, confidence in young women and making sure that they have the skills needed to succeed in whatever venue they choose to present themselves, whatever they want to be professionally, you know, whether that is physical or not. But I think it all comes down to leadership skills and confidence, and that's something we're seriously lacking in boys and girls.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Another point I'd like to bring up is that, you know, we talk about the den leaders and like that. When I was a kid growing up and going through the scouting program, it was the fathers that ran that. Mm-hmm. More often than not nowadays, it's the mothers that are running the young Cub Scout packs and things of that nature. And a lot of families have kids at close ages. So the mother runs the program for their son, but the daughter has to go off to another room while this program's going on because it's just for boys, okay? Or you have another set of parents who, you know, they're working all day. They have to get their kid, one kid over to Boy Scouts or Cub Scouts, and then they've got to take the daughter somewhere else because she's not allowed to be part of that same program. So it makes it more complicated for families. So I'm not opposed to the Boy Scouts opening it up to girls, but that's my take on it.
Makes sense.
Cool. Great. What do you got next?
Okay. Coming up, we're going to talk about the city or the government giving away money.
Let's do it.
Okay. So this week we found out that Labelon Building in Canandaigua, now this is a huge structure, 3-4 stories, right on Chapin Street, right off from our main street. It's been sitting vacant there for years. And part of the problem is that there's a huge contamination issue with chemicals they used to use in that building when it was a factory. You guys remember the Labelon stuff? It was a little tape that you put letters on, and you could put your name on your locker and that kind of stuff. Yep, that kind of stuff, Tim.
Yeah, I heard, you know, looking at the comments on 2020, Mike, it looks like that place was a toxic waste dump to some degree. I mean, people were saying that there were chemicals spilling all over the hardwood floors and it would just eat away at it. So I'm never one that's in favor of huge government handouts to bail out companies or corporations. I'm a big believer in capitalism. But if there's no way any private company is going to come in and develop this building because the remediation that needs to be done there is just too great and too costly, I think it does need to be looked at for sure.
Okay, so we're talking about a $10 million program, and they're going to the state asking for $1 million, about one-tenth of what the cost is. And they estimate that the cleanup cost is probably going to be running around $1 million.
Fair enough.
Okay, so they're asking for basically the money to clean up the site so it can be redeveloped. They're not asking for money to redevelop the site.
Doesn't seem frivolous.
They just want to clean it up, and it's not their fault that there's this contamination there, right?
Right.
I mean, basically, the city allowed that to occur years ago.
Who owns the building now?
Well, okay, I'm not sure whose hands that property is in right at this moment, but the people that are trying to develop this are called DHD Ventures, and they are out of Rochester. And if you look at the old Sibley building on East Avenue,
mm-hmm.
they were the ones who redeveloped that one. And they did a magnificent job taking this historic property and redeveloping it and turning it into a landmark in the city of Rochester. So they're a great company, okay, and I fully support this, okay, because, again, this is a situation that they didn't create, but they're willing to come in and take care of the cleanup, you know, with us paying for it, and then redevelop the property and hopefully turn a profit on it.
Yeah, that can mean long-term gains for the city. So
right, absolutely. You're talking about tax income coming in, I mean, much higher property tax income coming in, on top of which they're talking about apartments and retail. So you've got sales tax that will be generated as well. So, you know, I'm hopeful for that one. But there's another one that came up this week. Nolan's. They had the fire, burned the property down. That's a loss, but Nolan's didn't actually own the building. They didn't own the equipment. They didn't own the land that the building was on. All that was owned by David Gineco. So Nolan's has entered into an agreement with Gineco for a long-term lease of the land. And they're saying, we want to put a new building on there and actually make it larger than it was before, have an outdoor deck, second story, so it's got a lake view, things of this nature. But in order to do that, we have to ask for $400,000 from a state grant. Well, it's actually a federal grant that the state administers, but the city has to apply for. It's a community development block grant. And so they're asking for about $400,000, and this project is estimated to cost about $1.6 million. So you're talking about 25% of the cost of the project would be funded by taxpayer dollars.
Who's asking for this, Nolan's or Gineco?
Nolan's is asking for this, okay? So Nolan's would use the money to rebuild a larger building on the site. Gineco would no longer own the building.
Right.
Nolan's would have their own equipment in there. It would not come from David Gineco. So they'd be carrying their own insurance on the building and the equipment, and assuming business insurance, you know, in the event of any problems or like that. And Gineco would probably have his own insurance strictly on the property itself. So that's the way it would work. And I support this only because the larger size of the business is going to generate additional sales tax revenue. And it's going to create additional property tax revenue. And I believe that Nolan's has shown themselves to be successful business people, right? And so they have a history of creating good jobs, right? They're talking about 50 to 100 jobs. Now, they're saying these will be created, but really these are replacements for jobs that have been lost after Nolan's was burned down.
And 50 to 100 seems a lot. I thought that number encompassed construction jobs to rebuild at the new site. Am I wrong on that?
No, this is, so they're going to be running their catering operation out of the Nolan's building as well, right?
That makes sense.
Right, so they're actually going to have a larger kitchen facility than what they had previously. So in addition to doing the regular restaurant that they'll have there, and now they'll be able to handle tour buses,
mm-hmm.
And tour groups, which they haven't been able to do previously.
And I don't know that, you know, the thing I liked about Nolan's before, and granted in the summertime it was super busy, you'd have to wait for a table if you didn't have a reservation. People were willing to do that. It was fine. I don't know that I'd want to go to a place where I have, you know, 100 people that just got off a tour bus. And I don't know. It would just feel funny. I can see this from two different ways. And I'm a business person, so I would look at return on investment for this. If they're going to apply for a block grant, I want to ensure that it's going to impact the community positively. So given the amount of money that they're putting into rebuilding, how much of that in the long run, in 5 years or 10 years, are we actually going to recoup in tax revenue? So I think we need to look at this from a different angle.
Okay. Yeah, and I see that. Okay, so we also have a couple more stories I want to cover here. Our next week's program is going to be City Council Saturday. So we've invited members of City Council onto the program, and we're hoping to have a good turnout from the members of City Council to give their input about why they're running for office. This is also homecoming weekend, so this is the last game that's ever going to be played at Evans Field.
Wow.
Here in Canandaigua. And a lot of the classes are lining up at 1 o'clock over at Sonnenberg, and they're going to have a parade from Sonnenberg up Howell Street to Main Street and then back down Fort Hill. So that's going to be at 1 o'clock today, folks. So if you're interested in participating in that game, now's the time to get out there.
Go Braves.
Right.
And I think we still need to talk about the elephant in the room, right? So there's a lot surrounding this Pinnacle North
right.
Issue and the Daily Messenger and what's been going on there. So, Mike, you want to fill us in a little
bit? Okay, so basically the Daily Messenger is saying, we want to know the name of the police officer that shot the parole officer down at Pinnacle North.
Mm-hmm.
And the city of Canandaigua thus far has refused to release that information, okay? And I'm concerned about this because as a taxpayer, the city is opening itself up to a lawsuit. There's no reason why this information should not be revealed to the community.
So I look at this in a couple different ways. Obviously, government transparency is huge for me. But at the same time, in the grander scheme of things, how would knowing the name of the officer involved change the way we're looking at this? Or what would we do with that information other than knowing? Do we put that police officer and his or her family in danger, you know, by allowing the community to know this? I mean, there are some people that are very anti-police, especially in this day and age. Is it appropriate at this point when we don't have all of the facts in the investigation released, and I know the state police are doing a very thorough investigation on this, is it right for us to just give this name out and allow the chips to fall where they may before all of the facts come out? I think it's a little bit premature, and I think it's irresponsible, to be quite honest with you.
Okay, I don't agree with you, and here's why. Okay, this is not a situation where a police officer is being accused of shooting an unarmed person or anything of that nature. And I think the community is a very loving and supportive community overall.
I agree.
Right? You agree? So I think releasing that information would allow more people to offer their support to this officer and their family, assuming that their family, you know, and for the most part, I would bet that more than half the community already knows who this police officer is, because there's very few police officers in the city of Canandaigua with 15 years experience.
Sure.
So if people already know this, where's the harm in releasing the name?
Sure. And you're right. I think 99% of the folks we have in this community would be incredibly supportive. But all it takes is that one person that wants to start raising an issue or asking questions that we don't have the answers for yet. And I'm not saying that the name never gets released. But at some point, I think we need to make sure we have facts when we give the name, because there's going to be a lot of unanswered questions. And I think that would put that officer in a very difficult position. But again, there are two sides to it, right?
Right. But you read 2020, you know those questions come out anyways, right? So usually we're just shrugging our shoulders saying, we don't know
right
at this point. Sometimes that's the best answer you can give.
Nope. Absolutely. Absolutely. So again, thoughts and prayers to, you know, the police department and the officer involved, whoever that might be. And, you know, I think the Daily Messenger is doing their job. They're doing nothing wrong in asking for the information. But I also don't see that it's gross negligence that the city isn't giving that information at this point either. I think eventually they will have to. But I just don't know if now's the right time.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And the question is, how long do you hold on to that
right
information?
And I
right
wonder if it's just until the investigation, or the majority of which is complete.
Yeah, I don't know, because that could take months, right?
It could.
What do we do in the meantime?
Right.
Just wait?
Yeah.
You
so
know?
That's...
And here's the thing. When you take another human life, that has a huge emotional toll.
Oh, no doubt.
You, right?
I can't imagine.
Right? And so I think it's appropriate to have a period of time, right, for the officer to mentally deal with the fact, you know, that he's taken a human life.
And not just taken a life, but taken a life within the Brotherhood. It was another,
well, right,
another
right
law enforcement officer.
This wasn't a situation, right, this was not a situation where he just shot some civilian.
Right,
right?
Chasing
this was
a bad guy.
Somebody else in
right
the Brotherhood with them.
Clearly.
So, and I probably shouldn't use the term Brotherhood, because it's not
no,
all
but it
brothers
is,
there,
no,
right?
And I don't think
right
that anybody
so,
who's, yeah. I
right. In the fraternity, no, we can't use the term fraternity. What the
heck? Yeah, I know. You better not sign that agreement. Do not sign that agreement, Mike. No, but you're right. It is. It's got to be incredibly hard for everybody involved. So I think we need to respect both sides. And when the facts, hopefully the majority of the investigation will come out, we'll start getting more answers. And when the time's appropriate, we'll know. But I don't think it changes the news story. I don't think it changes how we react or how we view it, whether or not we know the name of the officer involved.
Yeah. Any final words, Tim?
No, I hear your arguments, and I say if the police department isn't sharing that information, they got a good reason why. They can share it at any second.
Sure.
So if they haven't, there's a reason why, and let it be. Again, we don't need gratification on everything. We can wait. Wait for the people who do this professionally to do what they want. That's why we got them in power.
Right.
If they say different, you got a district attorney. He could step on the air at any second, say whatever he wants. He's not doing it for a reason. Let it go.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't change the story.
Any last things? You got a few seconds left to throw anything out about Canandaigua.
Well, basically, the news from Canandaigua, go out to the homecoming game today, right? And have a good time there. Go Braves.
Square Dance is Friday, isn't that tonight?
Yeah, that's tonight, but by the time people hear this, it will have already occurred.
That's right. Well, hopefully everybody got out to the Square Dance. Hopefully people are sitting there icing their feet because they were out dancing all night.
I'm wearing my flannel,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you are. I don't see your cowboy boots, though.
That's as close as I can come.
Well, thanks very much for you two being on the show again. And enjoy every time. They're not going to be here next week. I'm going to be on my own, but we may have all these politicians on, which would be great.
That'll be a great show.
I want to give a big shout out to Jason from Northeast Archery Academy and to the Sonnenberg Gardens Haunted Garden Stroll. And thank you very much.
Thanks for turning on and tuning in.
That's right. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Oh, your high heel thing.
Oh, you want the high heel thing. Okay. Keep your head held high and your heels even higher.
There you go. And this is Corporal Tim Thorne, and we'll see you on the flip side. This is three men and a microphone.
And a lady. Join us Saturdays 9 to 10 and Sundays 2 to 3 while we interview the newsmakers of Canandaigua.